your Friday Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day and really good show coming up. Chris Hine from the Star Tribune covers the Timberwolves, of course, joins me here in just a little bit. Wolves versus Suns playoff series starts on Saturday, 2:30 p.m. at Target Center. Chris and I will get you ready for that series, talk through all of the storylines, all of the angst of the Wolves fans over the matchup, and just, you know, Phoenix handling the Wolves three times this season despite Phoenix being the lower seed, and just kind of try to figure out how the Wolves kind of get that momentum back and talk about how big game one is in this series on Saturday. We'll also talk plenty about Chris's Naz Reid story, a really good piece that came out not too long ago on Naz Reid, and Chris will talk through that with me as well, just the process of reporting that story and writing that story. Got some Vikings, Justin Jefferson. I wouldn't even call it a trade rumor. It's not a trade rumor. This is just Bill Barnwell. He does this every year. He puts together like one trade every team could make before the draft. And so he put this together with the Vikings. A possibility, let's call it a trade possibility, a trade speculation, trade possibility of what the Vikings could do if they decided to trade Justin Jefferson, just what that could do for them on draft night. Big transfer coming to the Gophers women's basketball team. Get to that in a minute. First, though, what did I miss? Wild season is over, probably just as well. It's been over for all practical purposes, for all playoff purposes, for a couple of weeks now, at least. Now it's officially over. They lost to Seattle on Thursday night. I appreciate the honesty from Marc-Andre Fleury, goaltender in this game. His assessment of it is pretty much spot on. He said, disappointing, just like our season. That was his final assessment of a 4-3 loss to Seattle. One of those was an empty net goal, so it wasn't all on Fleury. Wild were down 3-2. Seattle got an empty net goal, and the Wild got one late after that to make the 4-3 final. But, you know, some positives this year, yeah, like Sarah McClellan and I talked about on Thursday's show. Kirill Kaprizov had another goal yesterday, 46 on the season. He ended up having a really good year. Brock Faber had a great rookie season. Marco Rossi established himself in his rookie season. Matt Boldy ended up having a good year. Things like that. Like, there's plenty there to, you know, to build on. It was just like Sarah and I talked about. There wasn't that depth of scoring this season that they've enjoyed in past years, and that really got to them. And that's my worry about next year, because the supporting cast, the cast of characters on this team, unless they are able to magically get outside of the box somehow, they've got a lot of veteran forwards with no move or no trade clauses in their contracts. So it feels like the roster next year is going to be very similar to the roster this season. And is anybody excited about that? Has anybody said, yeah, sign me up for more of the kind of middling hockey? Sarah wrote this in her game story today, kind of talking about the draft. Like, they can't even get they can't even get the top pick in this year's draft. They can't even move. They can only move up 10 spots in the lottery in the NHL. So they're locked out of the top spot in the draft. They would, you know, they're probably going to pick, like, you know, 12th, 13th, somewhere in that range. Not going to be getting, you know, the premium pick that you might get in another year, things like that, if they had been a little bit worse and then not good enough to make the playoffs. Stuck in that kind of murky middle right now that no team really wants to be in. And again, you're going to have seasons like that. That happens. I'm sure this was not the plan going in. The problem is, like I said, how do you then get from here to somewhere else next season when you have so many of the same players coming back? And oh, by the way, they're still going to be a year older. And oh, by the way, you are still paying the last year next year of the Suter and Parisi buyouts, almost $15 million of cap charges there. So how the Wild can figure its way out of that will be the most intriguing offseason question. Is there any maneuverability? Can they, you know, bring in some of these younger players? Can they find a way to finesse a few trades that will help the team? Got to imagine Filip Gustavsson is on that kind of possibility for being traded after they re-sign Fleury to one more year next year. Could bring up Jasper Wallstedt, start him on that path. You just wonder where they are at exactly in terms of their progression. Is this going to be another stalled year next year before they kind of get out from underneath some of these contracts, get out from underneath those buyouts. I don't know what the way out of the box is, and that's the hard part. It's hard to get excited about next season. You usually get to the end of a disappointing season, you say, well, wait till next year. Next year feels like it's going to be a lot of the same, and that is going to be Bill Guerin's big offseason challenge. In better news for Minnesota sports fans, a big get for Dawn Plitzer-White and the Gophers women's basketball team. Former Hopkins star forward Taylor Woodson, six-footer, power forward, transferring from Michigan. She'd entered the portal after her freshman season, transferring from Michigan. Used to play at Hopkins. Really good recruit coming out of high school. One of the top 100. Rated 59th in the country by ESPN in the 2023 recruiting class. Didn't play a ton at Michigan as a freshman. Just 8.9 minutes a game. Averaged about 2 points and 2 rebounds there. She comes back here and will bolster that lineup for sure. Dawn Plitzer-White in a news release saying Taylor is a great addition to our program. She's an athletic perimeter player who has the ability to impact the game in many ways, pushes the ball up the floor. She gets to the rim and creates shots either for herself or for her teammates. She moves well without the ball, and she defends and rebounds at a high level. Those are all things that any team could use, but especially the Gophers. They needed a little bit of size on the wing, a little bit of size on the perimeter, someone who can get inside to get some rebounds, to someone who maybe bolsters their kind of presence there. So that's a big get for them. They've already lost a couple players, but not huge losses in terms of playing time into the portal. They gained another player last week, another bounce back from a Minnesota program, former Wayzata star post player Annika Stewart, coming back from Nebraska to the Gophers. Stewart has 1 year of eligibility left, but Woodson has, you know, several years left, just played her freshman year at Michigan. So that is a big get for Dawn Plitzer-White and the Gophers. We will see what that benefits them next season. Let us bring in Star Tribune Timberwolves writer Chris Hine, one of the most frequent, most popular guests on Daily Delivery. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. I've never been the most popular anything in my life, so this feels very good to be called that.
You winning the Daily Delivery popularity contest. I was reminded of your five-timer status. My wife and I have been slowly kind of crawling through this year's Saturday Night Live back catalog, and there's been a bunch of five timers club entrants. We just watched one recently.
Kristen Wiig
just got into the five timers club. You were the first Daily Delivery five timers club member way back in 2021. But
back then we needed things to amuse ourselves a little more, so we came up with that little gag back in the early days of this podcast.
I should look. I wonder how many times you've been on in the 3+ years. It's got to be, I probably have you on at least, you know, once every 2 or 3 weeks during the season. I bet you've been on 50 times by now. So
I think that's fair. I mean, nobody's going to beat Royce.
He's got the built-in Mondays, but. I'll get you a 50 time outside of Royce.
Probably more than 50 at this point. I mean, it's been 3 years now. I feel like 3 years.
Off season, we don't talk as much. So I'm just trying to figure out kind of what the parameters are. But anyway, we're going to talk playoffs here. They start Saturday at Target Center against Phoenix. First, though, let's talk about your Naz Reid story that went online Wednesday. If folks haven't read it yet, just an amazing story of kind of how, you know, the influential person in Naz's life and how he kind of got to this point. Maybe kind of start with, you know, how you got to be able to tell that story and what it's all about.
Yeah, it all kind of started 2 years ago when the other main character in the story besides Naz, his mentor, Rudy Roundtree, passed away, and it was game 6 of the Memphis series when he died that day before the game. And I had heard that was why Naz had missed that game, and just, you know, when I was thinking about doing, I was wanting to do a deeper story on Naz, and I never knew if he'd feel comfortable enough opening up about it. And so, you know, as his popularity grew, as all that grew, I kept thinking to myself, especially this season, like, I really want to do a Naz Reid story. And I want to find a way into it. I didn't know if he was going to want to talk about this at all, but the least I could do was at least visit Asbury Park, his hometown, and really, dig into people that knew him growing up, people that were influential in his life, and that's kind of where it all started. And throughout the process, I got to know a lot of people around him, and that included Sheila Roundtree, Rudy's wife. And I think through just talking to her and Nas and about everything that I was, trying to do with the story, they felt comfortable opening up and sharing what it was like to, go through all that. And it's a mostly a happy story in the end. I think what's remarkable about this story and what really stuck out to me was when Nas moved, went to LSU, he asked Rudy to move down there with him. I think
Yeah,
that really
that stood out to me
speaks.
too. Yeah.
I think that really speaks to the depth of their relationship and just how much Nas felt like he needed Rudy in his life and literally needed him right there physically. Needed him to be a couple blocks away or at his games, like that comfort level of always having Rudy around, having somebody there in your corner every step of the way was something that was very important to Nas. And I thought that was one of the most telling things and really goes to show you what kind of a relationship they had and how important it was to Nas.
And for the listeners who haven't read it yet, like how did that even start? I mean, this is not a obviously not a blood relative. This is just someone who in New Jersey became so instrumental in a life that, was it wasn't like his life was off the rails by any means, but it was someone who could kind of like steer him in a good direction, right?
So, he grew up in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Kind of as I detail in the story, I wanted to try to get these details right because mom has, two other sisters to raise. It's hard to commute back and forth between Asbury Park and Roselle Catholic. So as he's going there, his first year, his freshman year, he meets Peace, who is Rudy and Sheila's son, and they become like best friends. So he's hanging out at Rudy's house a lot, anyway, in Newark, New Jersey. So it just kind of naturally happened through his friendship with Peace that he just was spending a ton of time there. And it got to the point where, well, Rudy, they could take him to school every day. They can make sure he was, getting home from practice at night. AAU tournaments, they could take Nas to those too. So it just became kind of a thing where Nas gives a lot of credit to his mother for kind of allowing the Roundtrees to be like a second family in that way for him. So it just kind of worked out. Honestly, the geography of Northern New Jersey actually plays a very large role in this story because I think without it, I don't know that this relationship necessarily forms because Nas has to get to and from school every day. And it's just a little easier for the Roundtree family to do it than it was for his mother to do it from an hour south in Asbury Park.
Even when he gets to the Wolves, Rudy is a big part of Nas's life still. I mean, he's a undrafted rookie. He comes here. I love the part about they wanted to go the place that wanted him, that the team that was going to offer him right away the opportunity to come and play, without a lot of the other kind of factors into it. But like, just it's just fascinating this kind of relationship that grew even as he was a pro and obviously to culminating or not culminating but the night that he has to miss the playoff game because of the unfortunately because Rudy passes. It's an amazing story, but just like even here as a Timberwolf, this was a big part of his life and still is with through Sheila.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sheila has basically become like Rudy to Nas in a way. Sheila
Yeah.
lives here in Minneapolis, and is at all the games and tries to come to as many road games as she can. And it's that kind of they are they are became they became Nas's family along with his blood family in that way. It's that kind of bond and relationship that has carried on even after Rudy has passed away 2 years ago at this point, almost to the day. So I just think it just goes to show you like just the people behind the scenes that sometimes help these guys along. in their journey to becoming NBA stars. And it's always an interesting dynamic, especially as somebody's growing up. Like, who do you trust? Who do you not trust?
Sure.
Who are kind of the shady influences that might pop up? And Rudy was kind of his, as one friend put it, his Rudy's was Nas's protector.
Okay.
And that was kind of the guy who handled, those people that might have had been a bad influence on Nas's life. So, remarkable story of a, I just thought it revealed so much about Nas's personality, about what he values, and just kind of the loyalty that he has both to people in his life and, I think to the Timberwolves in a way, because
Yeah,
remember,
for sure.
that I included that little detail for a reason. They were the first team to call him after the draft. And, that meant a lot to Nas. So I don't think it's been a coincidence that, when he was a free agent that he re-upped here in Minnesota over maybe some other options he had.
One final thing on Nas before we move on to the playoffs. And obviously, there'd be some Nas talk in there as well. But, this sh story showcases a lot, I think, of what people love about Nas, but he's become this like a cult figure is wrong because it feels like in that case it's like sometimes you get the cult figure who plays like 5 minutes off the bench and everyone's like going nuts when they get in the game. Like he's a very important piece of this team, regardless of whether he's in the starting lineup when Towns was out or now that he's been back in a reserve role, primarily with Towns' return. But why is it, do you think, that people gravitate so easily to him, that Wolves fans gravitate so easily towards him?
It's a question I've wondered a lot. I think just because of that story where you get invested in somebody who goes from being a, kind of a G leaguer to a potential sixth man of the year, it's like it's fun to be in on the ground floor of something that blows up like that. Whether it's like a band that goes from being a little playing, small rooms that eventually fills up big arenas. Like, it's fun to be in on the ground floor of something like that, right? And this fan base has watched him from day one and
Bunch of Nas
gravitated towards
hipsters.
him. Yeah, exactly. Except they're not going to abandon him when he quote unquote sells out,
Right, right.
So I think that's part of it. I think too, he plays a fun style of basketball. Like, it's an
Sure.
he's very easy to root for because the way he plays is just very entertaining and fun to watch. He's very skilled. He can shoot. He can dribble. All that. So, and just all indications and things, like he seems to be a good dude, easy to root for. He comes across like he's just very likable. When you see him in interviews. Like it's just very easy that his personality kind of shines through. He's very relatable, very authentic as well. When you kind of have the cameras on or the recorders on, like this is who Nas is. He's not putting on any airs or a front just because a camera might be in his face.
Well said, and maybe an easy entry point into the playoff discussion. We saw two games of Karl-Anthony Towns' return. You beat it. What was it, Atlanta, Chicago? I'm mixing up
Atlanta,
my teams.
yeah,
Atlanta,
Atlanta.
right? Beat Atlanta, kind of narrowly at home, then lost, of course, to those same Suns handily for a third time this season. What have you made of Towns' re-entry into the team, and how do the Wolves handle that in a playoff series where the margins are going to be pretty thin? Do you feel like he's all the way back? Do you feel like there'll be a little bit more of a minute split with
Yeah.
Nas, or how do you think this goes? How do you think this plays out?
I don't know. It's got to be better than it was in the first two games, though, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And they've talked about this week being a critical week for him, just to really get back up to speed. And I think if you kind of view his first two games back as being almost part of the rehab process, it's like this was his first chance to really get full on intensity and game action. And now, this week is where he really ramps it up. I think that's maybe the framing that they would want you to have on this is that, yeah, that's all part of his recovery process. But there's no room for error now once game one tips off. And what we saw on Sunday was not going to cut it from anybody, especially if he's not fully integrated into being himself offensively, because 19 turnovers in the first half, it was just a disaster, an absolute disaster. And I think that's priority number one, because I think if you look at the last two matchups with Phoenix, the first quarters were awful. They were turnover filled, and Phoenix raced out to double digits in each of those games, a double digit lead in each of those games. So as much as you might want to talk about like the defensive matchups and the problems that Phoenix might face, I think honestly just number one is just cleaning up the turnovers, because the turnovers affects the other end of the floor too, and it leads to transition buckets and cross matches and all this stuff that allows Phoenix to get better shots than they might otherwise if the Wolves are playing them in the half court. So that's priority number one, I think, going into game one.
In Towns' absence, they seem like they did find some things, some combinations, some styles that were different. How would you articulate what they were doing differently when Towns was out?
I mean, the number one thing you're going to point to is the ball movement being a lot more freer and quicker. And that's something that Carlos talked about trying to maintain as he's back. Unfortunately for them, there are two matchups against Phoenix, the one with Carl and the one without Carl. The offense did not look good at all in either version of this Timberwolves team. So they're just going to have to really drill down and figure out what went wrong each of these times offensively. So they feel like Anthony Edwards was saying at practice that, it's like, again, just don't turn it over, and we've been playing them even. But I will say that as the games have gone on, the Wolves have never made a run even at Phoenix during these games. And I think that's a problem too, is that you can't just play these guys even. You got to beat them. It's no good to just play them even. You got to be winning. So, I think that the offense has never fully gained traction against Phoenix. They've never had like a solid punch in the second half of these games, because I just think that Ant has to get off the ball, because they're devoting two and sometimes even three guys on him when he drives. And it just is making life very difficult for him to score and pass. And so, playing through Carl a little bit maybe is part of the answer on offense, and making him the focal point for stretches of time to alleviate some of that pressure on Ant, and maybe even just secondarily open things up for Ant instead of the other way around.
So they lost three times. As you pointed out, they didn't even get within 10 points in the second half of any of those games. It's been, with Carl, without Carl. How do they reverse this? Can they? What's the, I mean, I'm not gonna ask you like what's the golden ticket? Like, obviously, if they knew, they would just do it. But like, you wrote about it right after the game. Like, this is not a good matchup. Like, this is probably the worst possible outcome. You end up with Phoenix, a team they've struggled with all year. I mean, they weren't going to be easy matchups anywhere. If you were the seventh seed, you'd be playing the Lakers right now. So there's not a lot of favorable draws anywhere in there. But why is this matchup so hard? And can they? Is there something they can do? Anything they can do to feel good about? Well, that happened, but we can do this or we can do that, and it doesn't have to be like that the whole time.
I've been thinking a lot about it. I haven't like broken down the tape or anything like that, but I don't know. To me, having Carl guard Grayson Allen like he was on Sunday is not it. Like I don't know what you do. I don't know kind of what the switches are. Does Carl try to guard KD, and you slot kind of everybody else down a little bit with maybe Jaden on Booker, Ant on Beal, Conley on Grayson Allen? But the matchups that they had on Sunday with the starters in, I did not feel like it was advantageous for the Wolves. Now, there's going to be tweaks. There's going to be, subtle changes that they're going to make defensively. I don't know if the matchups are going to change at all. We'll see how that plays itself out. But just from a stylistic point of view, you have three all-stars, and you have Grayson Allen, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league this season. along with Nurkic, and it's just stylistically on that end of the floor about as tough of a matchup as the Wolves have faced all season. It's akin to, like, a little bit like Sacramento when Sacramento has like Malik Monk in the game
Yeah.
against them, and like they're able to just have four people on the floor that you really have to respect shooting wise. And scoring wise, where not a lot of teams are able to do that, especially against the Wolves. And that allows like Rudy to be more of a lurker and play off of one of the players on the floor, and he kind of guards that guy. And that's when the Wolves defense can really thrive, and it's scenarios like that. So I just think they present some unique matchup issues. I think, let's give the Wolves a chance to respond here and make
Yeah.
some chess moves. Now that they have a whole week to really drill down on what has and hasn't worked, because game number two, they did not play a bad defensive game against Phoenix. They held them to under 100 points. So, it's not like they've struggled in each matchup defensively this season. And you can point to that one and say, well, Carl didn't play in that game, so maybe it was a little easier to defend with the lineups that they had out there. So I wonder just kind of what the chess moves are going to be that Finch is going to pull, what levers he's going to pull, matchup wise, lineup wise, and schematic wise. We'll see what they do in advance of game one.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Couple more things, Chris Hine. Game one in the series is obviously big in any series, but feels particularly significant in this one. Like you lose game one at home if you're the Wolves, and all of a sudden it's like, well, now you've lost four times to Phoenix, the home court advantage that you've worked hard to get all year, regardless of what your seed was, that's gone. You win though, and you change the narrative pretty quickly. All of a sudden, it's like, okay, now you can beat this team. Now you've gained the upper hand. How do you feel like game one in this series is even more important than maybe in another series, just because of how things have gone so far this
Oh,
year?
110%. Yes, I do. I really do. I think a win could really flip just the whole energy and attitude of this team, of the fan base, and of the series, more than, maybe if they were playing like New Orleans or the Lakers or anybody like that. A win on Saturday would just be such a shot in the arm, because you would just get that belief back. Because I think after Sunday, there was a little bit of disbelief of like, oh no, here we go again. We got the worst possible matchup. But if, conversely, if they lose game one, I worry about the kind of snowball effect of confidence spiraling downhill, and whether it be the fan base, the crowd in the arena, and then it feeds into the team and kind of the nervous energy that might build up in a home environment like that. And then you'd have to go to Phoenix and try to get one or two there. So I really do feel like this game one, huge, like more than a typical game one might be against another opponent for sure.
I feel like this has come full circle from, I think, something we talked about at the beginning of the year, like a season preview show, where it was you were thinking the Wolves could be a really good regular season team, but you were also concerned about what kind of playoff team could they be. Would they get to the postseason, even if they had a better regular season, than run into one of these teams that, can afford to, kind of sort themselves out, figure things out, know that they've got an extra gear in the playoffs, things like that. Does that kind of feel like where we are right now? And then do they have another gear? What is that other gear? Because we saw them play at a pretty high level a lot of the year, but they also had to kind of grind a lot of the last 30 or 40 games just to make sure they were winning.
Yeah, and this is that exact scenario has played out. The Wolves are the higher seed because they had a good regular season. Phoenix took a while to get the big three that they have together and clicking, and they made it to mid-April healthy and with the big three seemingly playing well together. It seems to be working. This is that exact scenario I was talking about. Now, does Phoenix have that extra gear, or is the Wolves defense, as it's played for most of the season, going to be able to transfer to the playoffs? I think Phoenix would argue that they have the right combination of people to exploit the Wolves. And I think the Wolves would say that as long as, you know, as soon as they make a few changes here and there, they'll be back to being like the number one defense, which will really show up in a playoff series and give them a chance. Now, I worry about the Wolves' chances in late game situations, because I look at Phoenix and I'm like, oh man, Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, that's a lot of experience and yeah, deep playoff runs, and especially recent deep playoff runs, you know, worth of experience there and know-how of what to do in late game situations when the pressure is on. And then I look at the Wolves, and we know Anthony Edwards' inconsistencies in those situations are well documented. So this is a big moment for Ant. He said as much to at practice when he was talking about that, about being better in late game situations. So, you know, this is another step in the maturity of Ant at 22 years old, to see when inevitably some of these games get into tight windows in the last few minutes, who's going to execute better down the stretch. And you know, I think anybody in those scenarios, I think right now, the, you know, everybody would say Phoenix has the edge there, but let's see what Ant can do. Let's see what he's learned. He's had a whole season to learn more about what teams are going to do to him in these scenarios, what to do, what reads to make. So we'll see what all that he's learned will come out in this series for sure.
And no pressure, because, you know, the trajectory of the franchise could be a little bit in flux too. You win this playoff series, you start to feel like, okay, it's a full group worth keeping together. You go out in five or six, and all of a sudden it's like, well, how does this get much better until you maybe do a little bit of roster tweaking, especially with the, you know, the luxury tax looming. It's a lot. There's a lot on the line here. There just is. You can't. There's no way around it.
There is. The stakes are incredibly high for this series, the following series, and who might be here, who might not on the team next year, who's getting traded, who's not, do they keep it all together, who's signing the checks. Like, I don't, you know, there's so much and a lot. We'll get some answers, I think, you know, based on how this team does in the playoffs. But, you know, I do wonder too, if they do manage to get through Phoenix, like in the supposed tough matchup, like they could be looking at a deep playoff run.
Yeah.
Like that's within the realm of possibility here. This could be the toughest matchup they face in the Western Conference playoffs.
Because they like, I mean, Denver's great, but they like their matchup with
they
Denver.
They like their matchup against Denver, and I think they would like their matchup against Oklahoma City too.
Yeah.
So I really, in, you know, Oklahoma City would play the winner of the 4-5
right
matchups.
Clippers,
so
Mavericks,
Clippers
right?
And Dallas, so you wouldn't be facing one of those teams till the
right
conference finals. So I really do think like it's on the table to make a run if they can figure out how to beat Phoenix. It's all. I you know, I could be making vacation plans for 2 weeks from now, or you know, I may not be making vacation plans for, you know, 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, because the inevitable parade and
parade route,
leads,
yeah. Where's
leads
the parade
right into
route?
The leads right into the draft and free agency and summer league, and you know, I won't be seeing a beach till middle of July.
Wow, that's we'll see. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but it's going to be fun, right? Like Target Center has been, 41 sellouts this year. It's people are, even if Wolves fans are a little bit nervous, maybe more than a little bit nervous about the matchup and being like, this is not how you wanted to go into the playoffs. I'm sure Saturday at Target Center is going to be, you know, it's going to be electric, and I'm sure every made bucket, there's going to be energy there that can help them. It's just a matter of, will that energy get, you know, can you sustain that energy if things start to go the other way? It's fascinating. It's a fascinating matchup. I mean, the The betting odds are pretty close to even. The Wolves were like a little favored in the first game, but the series, they're saying Phoenix by, you know, a little bit of an edge. So I don't know. They're saying it, you know, treat it like that as a coin flip. I don't know if you feel
Right.
it's a coin flip, but that's the way it's being
I
treated
mean,
right now.
coin flip feels about right to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think either team is gonna sweep this one or five. I'm expecting a six or seven gamer here. So I think a coin flip feels about right. We just have to see, can the Wolves adjust?
Yeah.
They've had a week, or they will have had a week by the time they tip off. And if it comes out in game one and it's more of the same from the regular season, then maybe we are looking at a four or five gamer. But I just think that given their success this season, the way that they have played defense, the way that they have adjusted defensively,
Yeah.
it's not like they play one way defensively night in and night out,
Right.
and they're very rigid in that. They are very flexible in the way that they deploy multiple coverages, the way that they can guard people, and the different matchups that they could deploy. I think because they are so flexible defensively, I think you give them a chance to figure it out on that end of the floor, and then see where the chips fall after that.
Well, I'll look forward to whatever other coverage you have in advance of the game, Chris, and I'm sure we'll be talking plenty during the playoffs. Congrats again on the Naz Reid profile, the Naz Reid story. Just excellent work. And yeah, good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Great stuff from Chris. Go read that Naz Reid story if you haven't read it yet. Just amazing work building that trust, writing that story so well. Definitely worth your time. Whether or not you are a Wolves fan, just a good human interest story, a good story about, you know, the bonds that tie people together. Also thought that, you know, I'm glad that Chris and I are on the same page about the importance of game one. I think I'm going to write about that for today's blog about that today, just about how in a lot of series, you know, game one is important, but you can kind of rebound from it. Really does feel like this game one will set a tone for the entire series one way or another. Not that it can't swing back, but it does feel like it's more important than most game ones. And I will break down why I think later on in a blog post today. Let's finish with the cooler. Want to hear a wild idea? Bill Barnwell, ESPN, has his annual mock draft where it's all trades. All 32 first-round picks involve a trade. So again, this is not going to happen. This is not reality. This is just Bill Barnwell having some fun. But as long as we're just having fun, let's look at the trade he has cooked up for the Vikings. Not with the 11th pick, but the number 23 pick, the pick they got from Houston in that trade a few weeks back. He has them sending the number 23 pick and wide receiver Justin Jefferson to the Patriots for the number 3 overall pick. Now, again, this probably isn't going to happen. He says, let's be calm for a second and talk through this. I don't think the Vikings want to trade Jefferson, and there are plenty of examples of organizations who have waited to get a deal done with a player and then eventually got them to sign on the dotted line. But he does make them does make note that Jefferson hasn't signed an extension yet, and he could, you know, he could want to trade at some point. Again, this is just an exercise of fun. So maybe not fun for you if you're a Vikings fan, but just thinking about Justin Jefferson going somewhere else. But the thought exercise is interesting because if it takes the 23 pick and Jefferson to get to 3, then you can draft your quarterback, you can draft Drake May, and you can still draft another receiver at number 11. Now, that's not a plug and play. I know it's a big wide receiver draft. I know you got to think highly of all the candidates, all the possibilities, all the prospects in this year's draft. But for every Justin Jefferson you draft, there's going to be a miss. There's going to be a Laquon Treadwell, for instance. So you can't just say, well, you can just draft your next Justin Jefferson. Doesn't usually work out that way. That said, interesting to see what Barnwell thinks is the value. Does that feel more onerous or less onerous than trading 3, maybe 4 draft picks this season to move up to get your quarterback? I don't know. Kind of depends on what you think of the value of a star wide receiver, the best wide receiver in the league, someone who's going to make a lot of money very soon, or the value of draft picks. It's interesting. It's a good thought exercise. Go read the piece at ESPN.com. I don't think they're trading Justin Jefferson. Doesn't feel like that's something that will be on the table. But you know what? Until something happens, you never know. Well, that will do it for me today. Hope you enjoyed today's show as well as everything else this week. Royce and I back at it on Monday. Plenty of good stuff next week. Timberwolves, everything going on there. We'll talk about everything. Until then, I am Michael Rand, back at it again on Monday.